You're listening to the Crashing the Net podcast on the No Credentials Podcast Network. You can follow me on Twitter at TomDaly2. Follow Mike on Twitter at DCSportsFTW. And you can follow the podcast network on Twitter at NoCredentialsPN. We've talked about goalies. We've talked about, on the other show, about the Verizon Center switching from Coke to Pepsi. So that's one change that the Capitals and Monumental Sports has made this year. They haven't made very many other trades or changes this year. The Caps right now are 0-3-1 going into this afternoon's game against the Buffalo Sabres. Can't tell you how that's going to work out, but only thing I can tell you is that the team has not looked good. It's hard to watch. I haven't watched a hockey game and gotten so upset in the regular season where I've screamed at the TV in God knows how long. I think the last time I've screamed at the TV before this season was the 8-0 loss in New York.
Right.
And Ovi got in a fight with Rupp or somebody.
Dubinsky, I think.
Yeah, but he got into a fight with someone he shouldn't have got into a fight with.
Right.
And that was the last frustrating game since now.
Right.
And
been about 2 years then.
Yeah, and the Capitals now stand in the where do we go from here river. And it's, I can't tell you where to go. A lot of people that we have talked to off the record have said, you can't fix this. Mm-hmm. There's no way to fix it. What I'm looking for from you guys is just your raw reaction of how this season has panned out, because I can say it's safe to say that we're already out of the playoffs. And if so, what do you do? Do you have a fire sale? Do you hold on and hope that this somehow turns around? Or do you just do the same thing you've been doing for the last couple of years and just let it keep going? What do you do?
I think, you know, obviously with Adam Oates coming in, new system, all that jazz, I don't need to go down the same route that everybody else has been going down. I think it's unfair, though, to give – I think he'd be getting the short end of the stick if we made drastic changes with him this year. I think he needs a full season with an off season to be able to implement what it is that he wants to do. But quite frankly, there's just not a lot of energy. There's not a lot of energy. There's not a lot of care. It doesn't look like there's a whole lot of work ethic there. I mean, I'm watching John Carlson in – and not to bash on John Carlson because I know you guys love him – but
no, he's played like crap last year.
I mean, there was a play in the New Jersey game. The first goal of the New Jersey game was a shorthanded goal that should never have taken place, because it was one guy that it was a blocked shot that wound up leaving the zone, caused a 2-on-1 going the other way. Carlson's barely skating to back check. And when the first shot and Nuvi made the save, the rebound kicks out to the slot, and Carlson's man is standing right there with a wide-open net because Carlson's not back-checking. And it's just a byproduct of the work ethic that this team has been showing so far. I think
that's not a new problem either.
It's not. Like, it's absolutely not.
That's if there's anything that this team has ever been consistent at, it's that they'll have nights where they just don't even want to play.
They don't show up. You wonder where they are for the first period.
Yeah, and it's weird because this year that's been every single game.
Yeah, every single game so far. We'll
continue on.
I think the one thing that I noticed early was that this team, the forechecking system they implement requires you to be a very endurance, very in shape and conditioned team. And it's clear to me that they're not, but what makes it worse is that because the forecheckers have to get so deep, if they don't get home, the puck's leaving the zone, they got to turn around and skate the full 200 feet of the ice. It's the same concept as if you're a football defensive front or a football defense, you're blitzing literally every play and the linebackers and the D front can't get home. Mm-hmm. Then you're leaving your safeties and your secondary out to dry, and the guys that are responsible for blitzing are getting exhausted because they're not getting home.
Right.
It's the same process.
See, I don't have a problem with the whole they're not conditioned thing, because on most teams that's a factor right now. But the problem I have with everyone using that as an excuse is the Caps have lost all of these games in the second period. I mean, they just are getting – I mean, obviously besides the New Jersey game where they lost in overtime. But you look at Montreal and you look at the first home game was
Winnipeg.
Winnipeg. They got destroyed in the second period.
Yep.
So that's what I hate to see is like it's not even like the Caps are playing like the Dale Hunter style where you cling on to a 1-1 game into the third period. They are just getting absolutely destroyed and then scoring a who cares goal in the third.
Right, right.
Is that why they say who cares?
What?
Rises Hunter? When you score a who cares goal, do people say who cares?
Oh, no. I mean, that's just me. Because I'm going to yell who cares when they lose probably like 4 or 5 to 1
he's
in Buffalo.
He's
going to
yell who cares when they scored a goal. When the Caps score a goal, a minute and a half left in the game.
The other thing is it's like there's not even any, usually with any team in this area, any team, we have some kind of glimmer of hope. The Wizards, you know, their offense looks good at times and they can't play defense. Minus last night, they stepped up both ways. The Redskins, even when, you know, they didn't have RG3, the defense was always good. There was something to watch. With whom I'm missing here. With the Nats, they never had great pitching, but they always seemed to score runs in games. And they always had like an Adam Dunn or somebody that was scoring runs, whatever. Right now with the Caps, I have nothing to look forward to when you watch them. The offense isn't rolling. The defense is awful. The goaltending can't do anything because they don't have a defense.
The goaltending's getting an unfair judgment.
Right. Doesn't have a goal. Ovi's
not even hitting anybody.
Ovi has been completely non-factor for the first four games. And quite honestly, and people are probably going to hate me for saying this, I don't expect him to ever return to the elite player that he once was. He'll finish his career probably in the top 50, top 35 players in the NHL, but realistically, the guy, I personally think he's stupid. His hockey IQ is low, and he is incapable. He's proven now that he is incapable of learning how to play differently. And if Adam Oates can't get that through him, nobody's going to, because he tries the same curl and drag, the same inside out move coming down the left wing side every single game.
And we're talking about a guy in Adam Oates who was able to rebuild Ilya Kovalchuk's career.
Completely rebuild him.
And take him and the Devils entirely to the Stanley Cup final. And yeah, they lost. But people were saying this about Kovalchuk when he was in his final year in Atlanta.
Right.
And Atlanta traded him away for almost nothing. And Devils took a risk on him. They got Adam Oates from Tampa to work with him. And Kovalchuk is the game-ending closer that he was back in the early 2000s.
Well, yeah. Well, not only that, Tom, but he's also out there on the penalty kill. Right. He's out there giving 100% effort, blocking shots, making smart plays up the boards, getting guys in bad positions so that his forecheckers can come in and help him. And he's just become a much more complete player. And I'm not seeing that development with Alex Ovechkin.
And I know that this is a little different, but Adam Oates was an assistant coach and a special envoy for Steven Stamkos.
Right.
In Tampa.
So, I mean, you're looking at Kovalchuk and Stamkos.
And you're hoping you get some kind of mix of the two.
Just give me a little bit for Ovi. I know Adam Oates is a head coach, so he can't specialize in these players like he was able to in the last two places he was, but just give me something.
Yeah.
Because we talked about this before the season, a couple of guys, but you know, nothing serious, was that TSN put out their top 50 list of players going into this new shortened lockout season, and Ovi was number 4 in the 2012 edition of that list, and he dropped all the way down to 14th this year, based off of how he played last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, 14th, you know, drop him down to 10, but don't drop him down the 14th. He was ahead of, you know, Jordan Eberle. And I love Jordan Eberle, but I don't think they're the same player.
Right.
So if they're having him now as maybe a top 6 guy, I mean, they were associating him with top 6 players, not
top line,
perennial top line players. So if that's where they have them, and I mean, they are people I respect, you know, Bob McKenzie, you know, Pierre LeBrun, they're the ones making this list. Aaron Ward, they made the list and they have him there. And look at what we're seeing. Absolutely nothing.
Right.
So what do you do? I seem to think and this is crazy, and I know that this is early to talk about it, but I seem to think that you have to completely blow out this team. I think that you're going to have to rebuild this team and get players in D.C. for players that know how to play the system.
The problem right now, though, is you can do it's an overreaction of the season that we're in. And because of the shortened season, Oates really does need the time to put everything together, because they're reeling here, trying going in between winning games and doing the system. So honestly, what's going to happen is they're just going to have to suck it up and suck this season. I mean, they might get rid of the one-year contracts and try to trim the fat a little bit for some picks, maybe a couple prospects, but you're not going to know until I think halfway through next year
what this team
what is going to be, until you try to get rid of the albatross of an Ovechkin contract. I hate to say this, but you're looking at an albatross of the Nick Backstrom contract right now. I mean, the worst part right now, too, is this system is making everyone look bad. You don't know if 27 and 74 aren't expendable now with the way the system is making everyone look bad. So that's the other thing. You kind of want to see if the system makes everyone else look good for a little bit more time next year, and maybe get way more value out of some guys.
How about MJ90? Is really looking like it's a bust by a game.
But I think that this is where the caps are now. I think that there's two things involved. I think that you have players on a team that, instead of trying to teach them, you know, a system and then firing that guy and then trying to teach them another system, I think at this point they're just confused. And they are a mishmash team. You bring up Marcus Johansson. He's playing fourth line.
After playing first.
He shouldn't be on the fourth line. That's not the type of player he is. So my theory is you look at teams like Los Angeles. You look at teams like San Jose, for God's sakes. They're out of their mind right now.
The Capitals of the West.
But you look at those teams, and you look at how they built their teams and some of the trades that they made. You know, San Jose gave up a high prospect in Charlie Coyle to get Marty Havlat to come in to be their second-line right wing. They found people that they needed to fit certain roles on their team for a certain system, and they made sure they knew the system before they came in. And look at them now. Patrick Marleau is on a record-setting performance with 8 goals and is the leader right now for all the trophies, not just the Hart. So maybe at this point you go, okay, we need to keep 8 here. Need to keep 19 here, 27 and 74. Those are our 4 guys. Now let's get rid of everyone else that we can and bring in people to help these guys out. Because in no way possible should Jay Beagle be a third line center. No way possible. And in no way possible should Matthew Perreault be a fourth line center.
True.
It doesn't happen. And even if you put Marcus Johansson as a fourth line center, it's still the same issue. You don't have a tough guy. If you need to go out and trade a 7th round pick for Zenon Konopka, go do it. Go get a guy that can get can win faceoffs and fight. Don't put Johansson down with the BS line, because that's what it is, and you're wasting his talent. If a team like New York, or God forbid Pittsburgh, wants Johansson, get rid of him, because they're not using him properly. So, and you go back to this. I mean, it all started on March 3rd, 2010. Trade deadline. Caps trade the 2nd round pick in 2010 for Eric Bélanger. What do they let him do at the end of that year?
Walk.
March 3rd, 2010. They trade their 7th round pick in the upcoming draft for Scott Walker. What did they do with him? Played him on the 4th line for the first 2 games and scratched him for the rest of the time he was here in D.C., same day, same team. They trade Oscar Osola, Brian Pothier, and a 2011 second round pick, 57th overall, for Joe Corvo.
Who's back with Carolina, mind you.
Yeah, and what did he do after that year? He walked. They gave up 2 second round picks.
Sorry, Tom, just to interject real quick. He also won a Stanley Cup with Boston. Let me just throw that in there real quick.
And he walked after that.
Continue.
Yeah.
But where are we right now? We're at 2 second round picks. Futures, by the way, and a prospect, and a top 6 defenseman at the time for a fourth line center, a guy that they didn't play, and a top four defenseman who didn't fit the system at all. And they traded their sixth round pick on the same day for Milan Jurecina, who they traded with Chris Clark to get Chimera. Chimera at this point was the only good trade so far.
And we can't possibly forget the Tomas Fleischmann for Scott Hannon.
I'm getting there.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to steal any of your thunder.
It's okay. The next trade's July 28th, 2010. Who, say what you will about him, for DJ King.
That's a wash either way.
I would rather have Della Rovere.
Yeah.
DJ King did zippy with this team. And at this point, none of these picks, mind you, this was 2 years ago, even at the time in the system they were running 2 years ago, made sense.
Yeah.
And I mean, at the time we were like, Corvo. Well, look at it now. Those are two picks and a prospect and a guy who's not playing anymore. But those are guys that we could have.
Second round picks contribute.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you go to November 30th, 2010. I remember this like it was yesterday because I was in class and I left because I didn't understand how it happened. Scott Hannon was traded from the Colorado Avalanche to Washington for Tomas Fleischmann. No relation to our co-host here.
But I do get that a lot, though.
Yeah. I think, is it spelled differently? Or is it,
No, it is spelled differently. There's two N's and a C in Thomas's.
Right.
Tomas's.
But the thing is that Fleischmann is still doing solid work for Florida. And he did solid work for Colorado. And Scott Hannon didn't really do anything for us. So they're just, these are all bad trades. And I'm not selecting which ones to pick. I'm just going down the list. Right. I mean, and then they kind of redeemed themselves when they traded Jake Hosworth and a third round pick for Dennis Wiedemann. But where is Dennis Wiedemann now?
He was going to walk, so.
You get what I'm saying? We're giving up picks.
We keep giving up picks and
he's in Calgary, just to answer that question.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, got traded for I think we traded him for a seventh round pick so they can negotiate.
Yeah, and a guy that we didn't re-sign.
You're starting to realize why Hershey and why the system hasn't been replenished as much as it used to be.
There's no picks.
There's no second
there.
And third rounders, and those are the guys that you actually have to develop and take some time before they come up here.
Same day. This was the I guess this was the trade deadline for the 2011-2012 season because they got Wiedemann, and then that same day, a couple hours later, at the actual deadline, the Caps traded David Steckel and a 2012 second round pick for Jason Arnett, who at the end of the season walked.
Right.
I know that I'm crazy to value second round picks, but depending on where you are and where you fare at the end of the season, Eric Fair, you can you can get a solid guy with your second round pick. And if you're going to give it up, make sure you re-sign the guy. Don't let him walk if you're going to give up that much, and especially David Steckel.
Right.
Who was the fourth line center for this team. He had a role, he knew it, and he played it very well.
The factor here is the Caps were always thinking they were like one piece away to try to win a cup. But I also see the point where we didn't re-sign any of these guys. You had to, like, I would have liked to see if you're going down that list and we still have one of them. Arnett mostly being the one that I'm probably
Chimera's most. Chimera's the only one.
Yeah, and he wasn't a deadline deal. That was just a deal that happened.
That was a deal that happened.
That was like the typical McPhee, right. I'm going to fleece you for this guy.
Well, Dennis Wiedemann was, and he stuck around for the year, but ultimately they decided, especially with the development of Orlov, that he was expendable at that point.
Right. And second round pick, by the way.
Right.
No, Orlov was a third, actually.
Was he a third?
Yeah.
I thought he was
so
a second.
So that proves the point even more.
Yeah.
That is a solid player. But then after that, you just kind of get, you know, players for players. I will give GM this. The Varlamov deal was a good trade because they got a first-round pick in 2012 and a second-round pick in 2012 or 2013.
Right,
you get one of those picks back.
Right, and you're looking at a guy who's going to walk. We already touched on
right.
that.
And then the next trade was July 8th. Eric Fair goes to Winnipeg for Danek Paquet, who's a ECHL fighter,
yeah.
and a fourth-round pick. So you get something back there. And then the big one that's really paying off now for the Caps is Thomas Kundratic for Francois Bouchard.
Yeah.
But then you just kind of get, you know, just whatever for whatever. Boston acquires Chris Bork for Zach Hamill. Zach Hamill's doing nothing in Hershey. Mm. And Chris Bork actually is a third line left wing for the Bruins.
Right.
And is going to stay there.
Yeah.
You know, I talked with Adam via text one night about this one, and this too soon to tell on this one, but I didn't like it because I think it was kind of a shoot from the hip trade at the draft. Maybe they talked about it, you know, before it all got started, and the Caps traded for Mike Ribeiro. They traded Cody Eakin and a 2012 second round pick to Dallas. To me, that's giving up too much for Mike Ribeiro. I think you could have got away with Eakin and maybe a fifth. I think we gave up too much. Maybe there were other people in the works, you know, trying to get Ribeiro.
Yeah.
But if you look to last year, Ribeiro was the third best center they had. And then the year before that, maybe even worse, because you add Brad Richards to the mix. I just don't think that we're replenishing the team like we should be if you're giving up picks like that. And I think it has finally caught up to this team. Is that fair?
Well, the thing about Mike Ribeiro is he's been a consistent 50-point producer for the last eight seasons, I believe. Apparently, George McPhee was trying to get him at last trade deadline as well. He was really high on Mike Ribeiro. I think that Mike Ribeiro will help. He's already got 3 or 4 assists. I can't remember which one.
He's been a bright spot.
And he scored in the New Jersey game. I think Mike Ribeiro has been a hit as of right now. It's just that it gets overshadowed when your big guns aren't going. I mean, Oates has tried to put Ovechkin on the same line with him, tried to put Wojciech Wolski on the same line with him, and things just aren't clicking with that team right now everywhere. So it gets overshadowed a little bit.
The main problem I'm seeing here is when we were going through all those guys getting traded, it doesn't look like a lot, but when we were just killing and blowing out teams in the Boudreaux era, all of those guys were producing because of so much attention that was being brought to Backstrom and Ovechkin and Semin and all of them. And, you know, you look at those three guys that I just named as like the core, when really your core players were the ones that can produce when the opportunity was given to them. So, you know, you're going to send out your top pairing against Ovi and Backstrom, but a line of Fleischman and Fair and Fedorov is obviously going to destroy whoever your second pairing is.
F-bomb was ridiculous.
So that's what I'm looking at, too, is that you're slowly downgrading everybody, and all the attention can be put on Ovi and Backstrom and your top guys, whereas now those second, third, fourth lines are not as good as they used to be. And there's no way to really upgrade all of them at the same time because now we don't have another draft pick coming in.
But there's a way that you can do that in free agency. But you have to be active in free agency, which the Caps weren't. I mean, yeah, they got Joey Crabb and Jack Hillen. Jack Hillen is the eighth best guy in the system, and they gave him a one-way deal.
Right.
What do you do with that? That's just BS. I'm sorry. I'm ranting here. I'm just upset.
Yeah, because, I mean, rightfully so. I think everybody should be.
Because, you know, it's all looking back and, you know, it's, what's the word I'm looking for? It's revisionist history. You know what I mean? But it's just one of those things where I think it has finally caught up to us. Mm-hmm. And because of that, because we were, you know, the big whale at the table, you know, pushing all in every time, it's caught up to us and that window that could have been still open is closed. Is that fair?
No, I think it's completely fair.
Yeah.
I think Pittsburgh and the Rangers are easily overtaking that. And just within the division itself, you look at Florida, you look at Tampa, you look at Carolina, and Winnipeg has proven it to be true as well, that the Caps are no longer the cream of the crop in their own division, let alone the conference.
And not to mention, too, on a local level, Caps are the worst team in the area right now. I mean, is
behind
that
the Wizards?
That's fair assessment, right?
Well, yeah. You can't even say that at that point. At this point, I mean, the Wizards
beat the Bulls last night.
Right. Wizards are 7-3 in their last 10 games,
and they're fun to watch. Like, I mean, in all honesty, that's what. But being the Nats, being the Redskins, the Wizards, the Caps, I've grown to love teams that are fun to watch that suck. Yeah. This is a team that sucks, isn't really fun to watch, and it's kind of like, where do you, like, as we've started this segment, where do you go from here? Because you can't put people in the seats when you can't put a product that's even watchable on.
Right. And as we say that, you guys are actually going to the game. So have fun with that. We'll get out of here. And thanks for listening to the Crash Into That podcast on nocredentialspn.com. I almost said the other website, by the way.